Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
Hello and welcome, Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the Power of a Proper Human Diet. And today I am thankful, grateful, and blessed, and excited to have Mimi on the channel. Mimi, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I couldn't be better. I'm so happy to see you again. It's been a while. We had such a blast spending time with you and filming with you. We're going to talk a little bit about your story. For those that are jumping on now for the live stream, let us know where you're from in the comments. And if you have any questions for Mimi, please post them in the sidebar with a QQQ. I just got to shout out Mimi here real quick. This isn't flattery. This is just the truth. It was an absolute pleasure filming you and bringing my girls with. I'm so thankful my girls got to come with. You're like a role model to them. Your example. You're just like the ultimate warrior. It's your energy, your drive, everything. It was very inspiring, and I'm so happy my girls got to meet you. You're like their aunt now. The girls were just here, by the way, a minute ago to say hi to Mimi, but really happy that your friends got to meet you. What's that?
I feel like their aunt.
Yes, they keep talking about it.
They're adorable. I loved them. I really got to spend time with them. It was really nice for me, as well as you and Adam, but the girls were an extra treat, so thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You inspired me. You inspired Adam. I know your story is going to inspire a lot of people in our documentary, but you inspired the girls too. Like when they came back, they're like, we gotta up our game a little bit. We got to do some more exercising and running around. And when we filmed Mimi, she did a cold plunge in the ocean, which was kind of a regular thing. And Emma was following her in there with the camera. So it was fantastic. I guess before we talk about that too much, for those of you that are new here or are unfamiliar with Mimi, Mimi is on Twitter and Instagram, Mimi Morgan, and I will have links in the description below for both of those, especially for people that are watching afterwards. But Mimi and I did a video together a couple months ago. It's on my channel, and I think it really inspired a lot of people. She's also been on Dr. Sean Baker's channel as well. Did you do one with Dr. Chafee too, right?
I did. I did Dr. Chafee and, the heart doctor I'm going to do in a couple weeks.
Oh, Dr. Ovadia.
Yeah, thank you. Awesome. I can never pronounce his name. I need to get that right. But I'm going to be doing him, I think, on the 8th.
He is the best.
Yeah.
He was the last person. Adam and I were just in Illinois a couple weeks ago filming him. And we were able to film him at the hospital. This guy is a heart surgeon. He's performed thousands of heart surgeries. And he's been eating a proper human diet, carnivore diet, for I think like 7 years or 10 years. I think it's almost 10 years now. His story's great, especially because so many people are nervous about starting carnivore because of cholesterol and heart disease and things like that. So wonderful. So Mimi, if you could... could you tell us a little bit about your story and what led you to a carnivore diet?
I will. So just briefly, I grew up, I'm going to be 70 years old in September, just to put things in perspective. So I grew at a time period where, packaged food was really kind of just coming on the scene. Thankfully, my parents didn't subscribe to it, so everything was home cooked. We really ate nose to tail as a child. And all through my life growing up, and that that was good in that it really let me know what a healthy diet was. And then, like a lot of people in their 20s, I was married at the time, you know, the big no fat, low sugar, all of that came out. And so I started eliminating fat in my diet in my early 20s, I would say. And then also with that, too, then cutting back on the protein and the beef that I had. And then bring me on through my 40s into my 50s. I was a stay-at-home mom raising my children. When they went off to school, then I started a career. And then that's where I started to work myself into the ground. I was newly divorced. And they're all off to college. And I just worked from, you know, before dawn until the wee hours of the night, developing a career. And it really took a toll on me. And then I would say late 50s, I started to have a number of falls and broke a couple wrists, which in and of itself aren't that major, but it triggered Dupuytren's, which is a disease where your body overproduces collagen on your hand. It can also get your feet. And that's really when I consider the downward spiral starting. I had radiation treatment for that. And while I was there for radiation to try to stop it, because you're going to lose the use of your hand with Dupuytren's, and I'm an artist. And so that wasn't an option. And there was this technique, this treatment from Germany. I found somebody in the U.S. To do it. And while I was there, I started to actually develop a lot of pain, had trouble standing, walking on my feet. Really just thought it was fatigue, and then the normal, okay, you're getting older, you're almost going to be 60, the arthritis, all of that. But she noticed, that the radiologist noticed something was wrong with me and sent me to a rheumatologist. And that's where I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And I did the normal course of that treatment, you know, the prednisone, the Plaquenil, the methotrexate, and then finally, a year and a half into it, started the biologics to try to, you know, stop the disease from going, because I was pretty inflamed and in a lot of pain. 2 years to the month, which is really kind of interesting, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Hmm. I had a number of symptoms about 6 months prior, and was diagnosed with Parkinson. And so then I started the normal treatment with that, which is the carbidopa levodopa. They also tried a number of other drugs because I started to have balance problems and a little cognitive problems. One of the things that goes with Parkinson's is executive function. That's what we do every day. That's putting things in organization. And all of a sudden now I've got a slowing of that. It's difficult for me to do. I had trouble with a lot of off symptoms. Off symptoms are in between your dosage of medication when the symptoms reappear. There is, no known cure for it, though I do believe that there are things that can make it better. But the medication masks the symptoms. And I'm working, and I didn't want anybody, kept it very private. I didn't want anybody to notice the symptoms that I had. And eventually had to give up work. It was just too difficult for me. It was really hard for a number of reasons. One of the side effects of the medication that I was on was extreme nausea, which is pretty typical. Mine was pretty severe and lasted longer. And so two things. One, first, my diet in order to try to keep my medication down was graham crackers, bananas, and saltines. Protein particularly competes with the medication, so I had to be on a very low-protein diet with about 4 or 6 ounces, which I would have at night when it didn't matter whether my symptoms were visible because I'm home. So now what little protein and fat that I had is even cut down even more. And so now I'm getting sicker. And so I quit work. And February, so I think we're 5 years ago this past February. I actually had a pretty good day. I walked 4 miles. It was by accident. 2 miles was the maximum that I was doing with the Parkinson's and the rheumatoid arthritis. But I You know, it's interesting. I dropped my earbud. It was a new gift. And when I went back to go get it, I was at the 1 mile mark, which made then I did 4 miles. And I was kind of proud of myself and got a new sense of energy, felt good. Like, okay, maybe I can beat this. Because actually my attitude was kind of poor. It wasn't miserable, but I was pretty devastated. Not only rheumatoid arthritis and then the Parkinson, it was like any hope for any kind of a life that I would have liked to have had just seemed like it was going to go out the window for me. And also because I had a lot of advanced symptoms and I was a multiple system atrophy suspect, and the lifespan's about 8 years for that. I had an awful lot of symptoms that were out above and beyond the Parkinson's. But anyway, I was sitting on a bench on a nice February day, kind of feeling pretty good. I joke about it. It's not funny anymore, but I had my lentil meatballs in the oven because I was definitely not eating beef. I had those in the oven, decided I was going to sit on the bench, get up to go in and take them out of the oven and have dinner, and I had a stroke.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Was that enough or geez?
No. Apparently I wasn't done. So I had a stroke. I came through the stroke well. Actually, I came through the stroke the best of everything. I got TPA. It's really important to know the symptoms of a stroke because they can appear very different than what you think. There's a number of them. And actually, while I was in the hospital and being treated for a stroke, sadly, my mother had one. And it was not recognized, and she didn't get to the hospital till the next day and had 12 more strokes and passed. Wow. Well, but I knew at first I really thought I was having low blood pressure. And luckily I found two men who I called out to them because I couldn't dial on my phone. I tried a couple times. I was really dizzy. I was having trouble seeing the phone and dialing. Foolishly, I asked them, could you just walk to me to my townhouse? And I convinced them to. And as we're walking, I lost my balance. And they said, I'm sorry, ma'am, we're calling in the ambulance. And when I sat down on the bench, I lost the left side. I was starting to not be able to speak. And I knew I had had a TIA about 8 years prior. Was on the same side, and I knew exactly what was happening, and I was able to say no stroke. But I got to the hospital within 25 minutes, and I got TPA. And that you need to have within 2.5 hours, which is why it's really important to know the symptoms of a stroke. For my mother, it was just gargling words. They just weren't making sense. And not horribly, but you know, my mother was 88. It's like, okay, you know, sometimes, you know, the attitude is they can say something wrong, but that was a sign of stroke. I came through the stroke fine. I was released. It was a medium size. I was released 3 days later. And
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, if you hadn't gotten the TPA, I guess you'll never know, but
I never know, but would it have likely been like a very high risk of having more strokes while you're there?
Okay.
Yeah, you definitely are of having, the stroke center's 10, 15 minutes. I mean, I'm going to say, you know, it's hard to tell. I actually was out of it. There's only a couple split second moments that I remember until I was in recovery. And so I don't remember a lot, but I know it's down the road, and I know that, from a family, I mean, I got it pretty quick, and the sooner you can get it, the better. I think after 2.5 hours, your chances of it not working increase, and you have a definitely increase of having a series of strokes. And again, I had a medium one, so I was pretty primed for having more.
That must have been terrifying for you, considering you've already had a TIA mini stroke. So you kind of know a little bit what's happening. I also had a TIA, and you're right. Like, some of those symptoms for me, I was confused, part of my lip kind of went numb. The side of my face was numb and I was getting tingling in my finger and I was just kind of confused. And for me, I was terrified because my grandfather had a full-blown stroke and was paralyzed on the side of his body for the rest of his life until he passed away. So that's all I was thinking once I started to realize, kind of like you, stroke. I'm like, this could be a full, this could be it. Like I could be paralyzed the rest of my life. But someone's asking, I think you kind of mentioned this, but what is TPA?
So there's a formal name for it. It's a drug that they give you to stop further blood clots. And I don't know what it stands for. I never, I just know that it's called TPA.
Right.
And it's a drug that they give you. You know, I was terrified when I had the TIA. And that lasted for about 20, mine lasted for about 20 minutes. Same side, similar symptoms. Obviously not as severe. Truthfully, you know, people have asked me that with a stroke. I think I was in shock. You know, I had a moment where I could utter the word stroke, and I don't even remember going to the ambulance. I do remember the, you know, the emergency guy asking me to consent to something, which I think was the IV. And I remember just being lucid for a moment thinking, I'm going to die and I'm not going to be able to tell the people that I care about that I love them. I mean, I really did think I was going to die. And then I have a moment where I remember your daughters, my daughter coming. Luckily, the men, when I had dialed, I didn't have a big lock on it. And they called right away, got my son-in-law, who I was trying to dial. And because I knew he was closest. And then my daughter came there. And I remember hearing her voice and a little sense of comfort. You know, I wasn't frightened. I thought I was going to die, and I actually was ready. I felt it like a real peace. It really was quite strange. I'm not going to be able to tell the people I love, and then a peace came over me, really thinking I was just going to die right there. And then I have a moment where they asked me to consent to the we want to give you something to help prevent strokes. And other than that, for a couple of hours, I really was not coherent or remembered anything. Wow. And I think you go in a form of shock.
Right. Wow.
You know.
And so, unfortunately, if that isn't enough, you still had additional health issues after the Parkinson's diagnosis, rheumatoid arthritis, and stroke. What sort of happened after the stroke?
So I was released from the hospital. You know, in hindsight, I had a screaming headache, which I never have a headache. And I had chills. It probably had 10 blankets on me. But they released me saying I would be fine. My daughter and son-in-law picked me up and said, you know, we want you to stay with us for a couple of days so we can watch you. It was a good thing because I was like, no, I'll go to my place. And they said no. And anyway, I was pretty worn out and tired. About 24 hours, I woke, was up a couple times. Something was not right, but I was not feeling well. About 22 hours after I was released from the hospital, I needed to use the restroom that was in the bathroom. And I asked my daughter, she had come up to check on me, if she could help me. And we stood up and I got to the end of the bed. And I passed out. Luckily, she caught me. And I was passed out, I think, for about a minute, she said. And when I woke up, I was in the most excruciating pain I've ever been in my life. Worse than 25 hours of child labor, back labor. It was, I've never experienced anything like that. And the ambulance came, took me to the hospital, and I actually begged them to leave me. I mean, I really thought I was going to die. I mean, the pain was unbearable. Got to the hospital. I was in emergency, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And, you know, I had MRIs. Every doctor under the sun was checking me. And finally, they couldn't find anything. My blood work was good. I'm notorious for having good blood work at death's door. Finally, somebody had the brilliant idea to do blood cultures. And they came back about 3 a.m. and I had, at the time, was staff A, And it was from the IV that I'd gotten in the ambulance.
So for those that don't know, Staph A is incredibly dangerous, right? Can you talk about that a little bit more? What is it?
We actually, most of us carry it. And a lot of it will be carried in your nose. Our body fights it. For some of us, and I'm already compromised, you know, I'm dealing with two major illnesses. I had a stroke, and somebody had, and it's unfortunate, but whoever put the IV in my arm, and the hospital did say that's where I got it from, because I had no scrapes, and they check over your body because they really need to find out, well, where is this originating? But it's a deadly bacteria, and so somebody, whoever the emergency guy was, had it on his hand. Somehow it got on the needle, and mine was bloodborne. Often you can get it on your skin, and you can have an infection, or, you know, if you have a nail that, you know, you've pulled the skin on the side sometimes if you get dirt in it. But mine was bloodborne. And that's not good when it's bloodborne. It goes to your heart first. This is the first place it goes. Second place it travels to is your lungs. And the third place is the spine, which is pretty rare. Those are where it travels when it's bloodborne. And it just rages throughout your body. And it's hard to beat. I mean, it's hard to beat. You're at a risk for sepsis. And, you know, it's pretty deadly. So anyway, they discovered what it was and they started antibiotics. About 5 days into it, I'm still showing positive, which is not a good sign. That means it's traveling through my body. It's allowed to seed, which means take hold. You know, this is a clear example where they followed the guidelines and then they finally broke them and put me on another antibiotic. I started to get better. I was totally out for all those days. I was on Dilaudid. The pain was so excruciating. But then as I got better, about day five, I started to come through. They started to stop the pain medication. And I was complaining about my back and nobody was listening because they just kept saying, you've been in bed for so long. Of course, your back's hurting. I was released on day 11, and unbeknownst to me or anybody in my family, the antibiotic that was making me well, the second one, they took me off of it and sent me home with a PICC line. A PICC line travels from your arm. I still actually have the scars from it. Travels to your arm and into your chest, into here, and I was getting 24-hour antibiotics, supposed to be for 30 days. So I came home on a day 11 and had home therapy, some home nursing. And about 10 days after that, I went home to finally convince my family, let me go back to my place. I'm okay. I was released with a walker, was still in a lot of pain, still complaining, still not as active as I want, still saying to the health aide, you know, everybody thinks I'm not moving, I'm not trying. And, you know, my back really hurts. But I went home. I lived on a townhouse that had 13 steps from the ground floor to the living, and then another 14 to the top floor. So they got me in. My family got me in and got me settled. They were a mile away from me, and they were checking on me all the time. And, you know, just sat for a little bit, decided to retire for bed, went to go take a step, and I couldn't move. And called them. You know, it's a learning curve for me because I called them to help to get me up to bed so I could go to sleep. And they came and saw me. I started to become hypothermic because they checked my temperature and they said, no, we're not putting you up to bed. We're taking you back to the hospital. And honestly, I just didn't want to go. I mean, I had just had it with them. But they took me back to the hospital again. So I'm in an emergency. They did blood work. They said, you are fine. You need to go home. Of course, your back is hurting you. You have no high white blood cells. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you. You're walking around with a PICC line, antibiotics. You just need to finish 30 days, call your doctor. And my son-in-law, God bless him, looked at the doctor and said, we're not leaving until you give her an MRI. My mother-in-law will not stop complaining about the pain in her back. And I do believe there is something wrong. She's a tough lady. And they refused and said, you know, no, I'm sorry. There are people here that are really sick. And he insisted, I don't care what it costs, you need to do this. And they said, no. And we're going to call security. And he said, I don't care who you call. We're not leaving until you do this. Finally, about five, they made us wait about 5 hours later. I got my MRI. They came back a couple hours after that. It was probably about three, four in the morning at this point. And the doctor didn't even come back. They sent a nurse in who said, I'm sorry, we're admitting, because I'm kind of out. I'm really starting to be ill. I'm starting vomiting at this point. I'm starting to feel really sick. And so I can just kind of hear this in the background. And there, she said, she's not going anywhere. She has osteomyelitis discitis. The bacteria is now seated in her spine.
Oh, my goodness.
And then on top of that, she has an abscess full of this staph in her spinal canal. And if it bursts, it's going to go to her brain and she'll be dead immediately.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Well, one thing quick.
I would have died of it. You know, it's a good lesson in having an advocate because I was too sick.
Yeah.
My brother, from a hernia, actually had a similar situation. He was alone and he ended up going to the hospital. They sent him home, come back the next day, everything's fine. And he died that night of sepsis. There is no doubt I would have died the next morning.
Right. God bless your son-in-law. My goodness. It sounds like he's saved your life. And in that situation, a lot of people would have been like, well, these are the medical professionals and they're saying go away and you're intimidated by them, but he didn't back down. So that's incredible.
Yeah. And you really do, you know, there really was something wrong with me. Something wasn't right. I had actually walked a mile that day with my walker. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I have all this has happened to me. I'm going to just do the best I can. And I walked a mile with my walker. So I really was trying and they just knew something was, one, I was hypothermic before I got to the hospital. They just knew something. You know, I didn't look right. Something was off. And thank goodness. But you really do have to stand up to them, you know, the people in there that they follow things. You know, my blood work is good. Go home.
Wow.
And you know, people are notorious for, you know, it's like, who doesn't have back problems? Well, I honestly never had back problems.
Right.
So that was a real tip. It wasn't like, okay, I've had back problems and now they're exasperated because I'm sitting in bed. So I had emergency surgery 24 hours later, about 3 o'clock in the night. And that's because there were a couple of car accidents and they got a billing ahead of me. And I was quite ill before I went in. You know, and I wasn't aware that I was that ill because I was too sick to know it. I had a lot of family members calling me and any family member close was at the hospital. And actually the nurse who went home at 7 was my nurse at the prior hospital visit. And she stayed the whole night with me. And so I had surgery around midnight and got out about 3 o'clock in the morning. Surgical. Because they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to open me up loaded with staph. They said, just keep her on antibiotics. And the infectious disease doctor in the hospital said, she's literally not going to make it the night. You need to open her up in what's called surgical debridement. They remove a little bit of the dead part of the bone because it's in my bone and then hose me off. They went through the back. I think normally they might have actually gone on another angle, but they didn't want to disrupt the abscess that was, you know, in that area. And they hosed me off and I was in the hospital for about 2 months because I had another possible TIA and then all my white blood cells died. And so I had to be in lockdown. So it's about 2 months, beginning of first week in April, 7th when I went to rehab, still with the antibiotics. So at this point now, they've deemed it's MRSA, which is the deadly form of staph. It means it's antibiotic resistant. And that's because all the antibiotics they put me on for the 2 months I was there, I wasn't getting better. And finally, daptomycin was the one that started to work. And at this point, they're like, you know, we believe it's MRSA because nothing that we're doing is working. We keep trying up, you know, what typically would kill staph, and it wasn't. So I went to rehab for about, for a good 3 weeks to try to learn to walk again with a walker.
And what was that like at that point in terms of your mobility? What were you able to do?
So I was walker with assist only. I was still a high risk fall. I had actually got up to go. I was when I was in rehab, I was allowed to walk alone when I went in there, but I had a fall. And so then now I was put on assist only, which meant I had to wait till somebody helped me with a walker to take me. It was pretty tough. I really couldn't do much moving. I was in an awful lot of pain. I was pretty weak. You know, I'm on, not including the hospital drugs. I mean, with the hospital drugs, I was probably on 20 drugs. They had me on so many things, it was nuts. But when I got released, you know, I was on my 13 plus medications. You know, I was sick. I was being poisoned. I got another infection while I was in rehab. So now I'm on a different antibiotic. And, you know, I lost like 15, 20 pounds just in those 3 weeks. I couldn't eat. I mean, I was just on so many drugs and so ill.
I can't even imagine, but what is your spirit like at this point? Like, what are you thinking after going through all of this?
You know, I was just numb. You know, I was numb. I was kind of beyond hopeless. You know, I mean, it's kind of a funny thing, you know, a funny place to say I am, but, you know, I wasn't depressed. I wasn't sad. I was beyond it.
Did you feel like...
I just couldn't find, you know, I just couldn't see how any of this... And, you know, they didn't, you know, they still gave me a 50-50 chance for the next year and a half of even surviving this, because it typically comes back. You know, I mean, it's just, I hurt. I was in pain. My pain level was 7 to 8. I don't do pain medication, so I'm white knuckling it. You know, I might have taken an Advil or something, but it's, you know, that's not an option for me. So it wasn't like, you know, I had relief from the pain. My mobility is awful. I'm nauseous. I'm sick. I've got one thing after another piled on, the Parkinson's and the RA. You know, I have a history of lifelong asthma. So when I got home, I was getting a lot of bacterial infections. You know, it weakens your immune system, the bacteria. I don't know. I just, you know, kind of like sit me on a sofa and, you know, come back for me, whatever. I mean, I had no life in me, no energy, no life, no hope, no faith. I mean, just, I figured, you know, honestly, God's just flat out done with me.
And then on top of it, all of those antibiotics must have just destroyed your gut as well.
Oh, it destroys your gut, you know, then you become really susceptible to every other infection. And, you know, they just can make you, they make you nauseous too. So yeah, everything, it's not, no, none of it's working in my favor at this point.
It's incredible looking at you now and having spent the time with you now from what you're describing to where you've come now. So can you take us like from that point, how did you get from there to where we are now?
You know, it's incredible. It's still incredible for me. You know, I don't think about it, but when I tell my story, I'm like, wow. you know. So, Nick, I did 15 months of physical therapy 3 times a week. I got rid of the walker. I still had to sit to shower to wash my hair. I did not have the energy to stand, which is not a lot of energy, but I couldn't do that. You know, I had, you know, every home mobility aid you could think of around. And sometimes I would use my walker. I couldn't carry, but 5 or 10 pounds was the maximum. I had cane, so I'm using a cane. If I walked outside, sometimes I would have 2 walking sticks for double because I still was at a risk of falling. Still in a lot of pain, you know, sitting down, getting up was hard, fixing a meal. Rolling over, thank goodness I had an iron bed. I had to hold on top of it to try to roll over. That would take a few minutes. Could only sleep on one side. But I did physical therapy. I tried. I just wasn't getting anywhere with it, you know. I've walked a couple times, maybe a quarter of a mile. But that set me back for 4 or 5 days where I couldn't even leave the house. So about 15 months, you know, I go for my checkup and the orthopedic said, this is your life. You're just going to have to live with it. You know, basically you're alive. You know, this is your spine. I have another curve in my spine, which is certainly not helping. You know, a lot of the vertebrae crash, it's fused. And it's just like, this is your life. And I didn't like hearing that at all.
Right. What are you, I can't imagine you have much of an appetite, but what is your diet like going through all of this?
So I'm still very, very plant-based. I still with bananas and the graham crackers and all of that because one now am I, you know, nauseous from the Parkinson's medication. I'm also nauseous from the antibiotics. Maybe a small piece of chicken, small piece of fish, maybe a hamburger once or twice a month. So my diet isn't great. You know, I'm a good eater and I didn't eat junk food, but, you know, I wasn't getting nourishment. And, you know, I wasn't working, but I still limited my protein to kind of nighttime and, you know, very, very little protein. So obviously I'm weak. So now I'm also dealing with vitamin B12 deficiency. I've got iron deficiency. I mean, it's just a pile on of what I'm being treated. Nighttime sleep disturbances, dystonia, restless leg. I had every specialist but a kidney specialist.
And my
diet is not good.
Right. How is your family taking all of this?
It was tough. Every time they looked at me, I could just see the pain in their eyes. You know, this wasn't their mother. Because I was losing hope. I had no fight in me. You know, I just was existing. And, you know, part of it now that I see in hindsight is I was nutritionally deprived. Because as we get on with the story, that's where things started to turn around. I really was nutritionally deprived. And when you are, you just aren't functioning at all. So no, it was tough for them. There was already talk of, you know, if things don't turn around, we're going to have to look for a place, some community where there's assisted living, you know, in the not too near future, like, you know, about now, about when you're 70. You know, I've actually never shared this with them. And I'm not even sure if they've even listened to any of my podcasts, because I've kept this all secret. But the first thing that ran through my mind was, I'm not going to live that long.
Wow. So how did you get from there to where we are now?
Well, my mailbox story, you know, I walked to the mailbox that I would get to that I never paid attention to. And, And I had like a point in my head, you know, the next block I could see I want to walk to. And I stopped at the mailbox thinking, you know, I just don't have it in me to go on. And I turned around in absolute defeat thinking, I'm just going to let this take me. You know, I'm a burden to everybody. This is no life to live being like this. My time is already going to be probably short anyway. God's got no use for me. I'm just going to turn around and I'm just going to let it just take me, consume me, and let go of it. And as I turned, I heard a voice. Okay, so you can't do what you want. What can you do? And I pondered that question and I said, I've got 10 steps. And I turned around and I took 10 steps and I walked home. And I didn't think about it. You know, it didn't hit me at the time. But the next day I went and got to my place plus 10 steps, which is barely across a room. And I stopped and I said, okay, do you have 10 steps in you today? Most of the days I did, and I'd take another 10 steps. And I just did this. And then about a month or so later, you know, there started to be a little bit of a change that happened with me. And then I realized, you know, at this point now, I put on some weight because I'm not mobile and I'm eating a carb diet with little protein. And, you know, I was smart enough to know that was not good for my back. I needed to be lean for my back. I looked online, went across the street because a doctor I'd known recommended him, actually her written review. Kind of funny, I thought, well, I was going to get a weight loss pill. And I went to him thinking, what's one more pill? Because I'm still not thinking clearly. And he sat me down after he listened about an hour and a half. I brought my bag of medication, told him what I was eating. And he said, will you trust me? And I said, sure. And he said, I want you to eat 50% fat, 25% protein, and 25 carbs. I thought he was out of his mind, and I told him so. You know, do you not realize I want to lose weight? He said, no, your first thing is you're a really sick woman, and we need to get you well. Whatever weight you need to lose, and it's not as much as you think it is in your head. And yes, I do need to lose some, but you know what the reality is and what your head thinks are two different things. And the reality is you're a sick woman. We need to get you well. And so I trusted him, and I met him actually every week, and we really hit it off. He'd been sick himself. And about a month later, I wasn't feeling sicker. And I had been at the point where every month I was sicker. And then a couple months in, I started to feel better. Because I was nourishing my body. You know, I was eating some beef and fat. And then from about 3 months, any carb cravings I had, and they were good carbs, you know, and that doesn't mean I didn't eat some things that I should have, but, you know, I didn't have to throw away a lot of packages. Thank goodness, because of, you know, how I grew up. But I was very cautious of, you know, any fruit I had, any salads, or if I had a potato, I mean, those were all carbs that were restricted. But I started to feel better. I started to eat more beef. I started to eat the fat on the beef. And I started up my fat. And it was about 9 months in where I started to really feel good. I noticed some of my symptoms were getting better. And that's where the light bulb went off in my head. Like, food has everything to do with your well-being.
Quick interruption. Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit
donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members only videos. We do members only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is, we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to today's video.
And it was a pretty great moment. You know, when you make that connection, right, and you just like know, like to your core, you just know. And there was a lot I was going to have to learn, but I just knew. And I, you know, had 9 months of nourishing my body. And it was at that point where, as the symptoms started to leave, I started to eliminate my medication.
Hmm.
Little by little, over a year and a half to 2 years it took me. And I am now free of all my medications, all my Parkinson's medication, off of my antibiotics, which they told me I would die. They wanted me to be on them for life. They said I would die. I went to the doctor and said, well, can we talk about this? And he said, no, I know you want to get off of them, but it'll come back and kill you, the MRSA. And it'll come back, and it comes back quick. It'll come back in 30 days. And you probably are not going to survive the next bout. And I said, well, I've been off of the antibiotics for 45. He said, okay, well, you're alive. Call me if you have trouble. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah. It was just nuts.
How long ago was this, Mimi?
So let's see. So I am 2 years last June, 2 years, I mean, this June ago, free of all medication.
Wow.
So it took me a time. So 5 years in February was... 8-9 years ago when I started getting sick, I had my stroke, you know, 5 years and 4 months ago. And then the MRSA, the, you know, bacterial infection was soon after that, you know, a year of 15 months of the status quo, changing my diet, a good year and a half or so. I did not waver one bit. And I stayed at that 70% fat, and then I'm at zero carbs for that. After that 9 months, I went down. I asked the man, I said, you know, I'm feeling like really good. We started eliminating oxalates, lectins. And I said, he's just you need to trust your body and go with it. And what was I going to say? And I'm at 5% carbs at this point. I hadn't gone carnivore yet. I still was having a little bit of some protein, you know, I mean, a little bit of like a salad or something like that. Maybe a carb up one day a week where I might have some fresh fruit. Dairy doesn't always suit, never has suited me well. So I eliminated that in there. But I did not deviate from that. And not because I just, strict. I knew my body just needed every opportunity that to heal.
Right.
And I was getting better. So I certainly didn't want to take the risk of going back to where I was or slowing my healing down.
Right. It seems like when you started eating the meat, like you were able to listen to your body more, or almost like your body was like, yes, this is what I've been missing. This is what I need.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, it really was. I mean, I'm starting to, you know, have beef a lot, like, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I mean, I don't even know if I had that in 6 months or a year. It was turkey and some chicken and seafood, and maybe once a month a burger. But yeah, I was able to listen. Well, because your mind's clear. I was having cognitive issues, which is one of the reasons I had to quit work. And that's improving for me. Everything reversed itself. Everything healed. And it took time. And I was patient. I just kept going with it. And it was, it just was incredible. And then I started to get my strength. So I started to be able to walk more, started to be able to walk longer, started to be able to stand up straighter. Now I'm able to stand up and wash my hair. And all those things might seem trite, but when you're sick, your world gets smaller. And then it can get so small that you almost don't have a world. And my world is now starting to get bigger and bigger again. And where I'm at now, my world is probably the biggest it's ever been.
Was there a point where you started having hope again and you're like, there, maybe this isn't going to be my life forever?
I'll tell you when the exact, I know when the exact moment was. So about 2 years of doing the diet, or a year and a half, I'd gotten up to 3 miles. I was out west. I was with two of my daughters. One of them from Alaska came to visit. We were in Santa Fe. We went on a hike in Diablo Canyon. We took a wrong detour, so it became a little bit longer. It ended up being 7 miles. The last half mile was absolutely brutal. Every step I took, I kept thinking about my 10 steps, but I was like, just one more step, just one more step. And I did that for a half a mile and I finished it. And I have the picture of me with the jeans and the smile and the columns in the back. That was in Santa Fe because we went to town, and I was walking through there, and my daughter made a comment about, smile, mom, like the world's yours, or something to that fact. And it just hit me. It hit me that I just walked 7 point, like 1 mile. And I've got it. I've beat this. This thing isn't going to get me, and I'm living my life.
That's amazing. It really is incredible because some people, for one reason or another, sort of get a second chance at life. It seems like you've had several second chances at life.
Yeah.
You had so many close calls. But the thing that's so amazing about your story, from my perspective, is you seem like you had to fight for your second chance at life. Like you didn't give up and you're like, I'm gonna figure this out and I'm gonna do it. Where I think a lot of people would have said, I had a stroke, I had MRSA, I have Parkinson's, the mobility issues, nothing I can do about it. But you didn't give up, you just kept fighting.
Well, I think I would have lost the battle if I hadn't met the man and he hadn't said to me, I want you to eat 50% fat, 25 protein.
Right. Do you know this guy still?
Pardon me?
Do you still know this guy? Have you talked to him
I do.
lately?
It's across the street. I do.
Is
I
he?
haven't seen him in a while. I would have lost the battle if I hadn't come across to him.
Wow.
So to me, everything was really a godsend. I know it would have, because it really took nutritional healing, which allowed me to feel better, think better, and like you said, hear my intuition. It's pretty hard to hear your intuition when you're weak, when you're sick,
Yeah.
When you're on tons of medication that's poisoning you, because it is poison. I don't care what anybody says.
Nope.
Your mind's not clear. You can't hear all of that. It's really hard. And then when you're in pain, everything's just dull. Everything is a chore and an effort, and it's pretty tough. When you're nourished, I think you can ride through those things. I think you can find that place where you can find the fight. And that's really what I needed to get to. I needed to get to a place where I had enough physical strength where I'm like, okay, I've got some fight in me. And the fight's gotten stronger. It continues to get stronger now, even. But just enough that it's like, okay, now things are starting to happen, the synchronicities, I'm feeling better. And it's not that I could see a light at the end of the tunnel or where I was going to end. If you would have told me even 3 years ago I'd be where I am today, I'd say there's no way. But I could see the light. And I just kept following it. You know, just trusting and just kept going.
Yeah. It's a miracle. It's absolutely incredible. Like, if you think back to when you were at the worst, if you would have been able to look at a time machine and see where you are now, and what Adam and I and Katie and Emma saw when we visited you, and your exercise and your regimen and your jogging and running and everything you're doing, it's unbelievable. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Was there a point?
Well, it is, but I think because we're told it is, but I do believe it's, how I want to say this. Yes, it is incredible, and I don't dismiss how incredible it is. But there's tons of people with incredible stories, and I think if people are nutritionally, if they're nourished, I think there's a possibility for everybody to have their incredible story. I think because we're not nourished, because what dietary guidelines are, and we're discouraged from eating like this. I mean, I still get people to try to discourage me from eating this way. I think because we're groomed to look for medicine as a solution, and not that, you know, we've been blessed with a wonderful human body. And for me, I have my belief and faith in God's important. That's incredible ability to heal. I mean, look at what I've done at my age, you know, when people are accepting frailty and, you know, what's one more medication? That's just part of the course for my age. Really says a lot about the power of the body to heal and the human spirit. And I think it's there for a whole lot of people. We've just been trained to just think it's like, you know, like a one-off thing. Like, you know, this is rare. And I think it's, I really believe it's there for everybody who really wants it. And that doesn't mean I'm blessed and it's a miracle that I'm completely healed. Not everybody will. I'm really lucky. And I healed in a shorter time than I was sick. And I came through with the stroke pretty well. But, you know, there's just incredible stories with neuroplasticity of people who through meditation in addition and other means, what they can do and heal is just, our bodies are incredible. We just need to treat them right. And for me, food and nourishing, it was the first step.
Yeah. I love it. That's one of the big things I've learned doing this documentary. It's amazing what the human body will do when you just put the proper fuel in the tank and you stop putting the improper fuel in. It's like you said too, it's almost like most of humanity, even if they didn't have the severe illnesses that you had, Parkinson's and rheumatoid arthritis and all those things, it's almost like they're sick. It's like you're sick or you're fatigued or you have brain fog because you're not putting the proper fuel in the tank. And a lot of people go their whole lives that way and they're just doing the bare minimum, just kind of doing enough to get along sort of thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Was there a point, Mimi, so you had this doctor tell you, eat this way, which is probably saved your life. Was there a point after that where you started doing more research and you're like, whoa, this is actually kind of a thing, carnivore, and there's these doctors online talking about it?
So I was doing, you know, keto, a lot of beef. And, you know, actually kind of through Twitter. I was on Twitter, not on that. I came across it. And I was still having recurrent bronchial infections and some ear infections. And once it gets in my lungs, I usually have to do antibiotics and prednisone. None of that's good for what I was dealing with the MRSA. It did come back twice, the MRSA on my skin. So I definitely know it was seated in my body. And I was like, you know, how can I take another step? What else can I eliminate? You know, give my body a break to heal. And, you know, that really was in my mind at this. I'm convinced that food was going to heal me. And so that's where I just, you know, learned about carnivore. And I thought, okay, so I'm going to eliminate, you know, really all carbs. I'm going to eliminate all vegetables. I'm going to eliminate fruit. I'm going to eliminate all dairy. And I'm just going to go with beef. I live in the water. So if I can get wild seafood, I'll have some of that. But I'm going to really do a minimal diet. I did introduce eggs. Eggs don't work for me. So I've taken those back out. So I did carnivore January of 2023. So I'm about 17 months in. This year, 2024, I decided to go pretty close to the lion diet. You know, I do have my coffee and I drink that. And just the beef, and it's been really good. So my, I had a little bit of cold last week. For the first time in my life, no antibiotics, no prednisone. It did not go to my chest. So that's a huge win for me. And so, again, it was a smart move for me to do the carnivore and to try to be a strict carnivore. Mm. So butter. I've introduced just this last month, maybe a little bacon again. We'll see. If I have to back off, that's fine.
Mimi, when I went to interview you, I wanted to hear your incredible story, and you shared that for the documentary. I can't wait to share that with people. But I learned a lot of other things that I wasn't expecting. And one thing you said to me while I was filming you, I asked you, I don't even know if I asked you, but you spoke about gratitude. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I sure can. No, I don't remember. You know, it was really a great interview. I know it was a long time. I'm not quite sure how long we were at it. You know, it's pretty emotional. I don't remember, but I do. We did talk about gratitude. You know, I'm not quite sure what point where that kicked in for me. And I'm normally a grateful person. That's just my spirit. I'm pretty optimistic. But at some point on this journey, and I don't know when, I just started to realize the connection with just, oh, I know when it was. When it really developed. So, you know, I have a grateful spirit. I live at the water, and I started to go out and watch the sunrise. I'm like, why am I not doing this? You know, it's, you know, 6-8 miles down the road. And probably the first sunrise, and not that I haven't seen it before, just, you know, I was on the beach because it was in, you know, at cold weather, so people aren't there watching it then. They usually wait half an hour and come out. I'm on this beautiful beach that we were on alone, and the sun's coming up, and I'm thinking, I am alive, and I have such an incredible life, and I felt so blessed, and it was just like a huge aha moment that, like, went through every cell in my body, literally just took over me. And so I try to live, I don't even have to work it. I'm just grateful for every day. It's the first thing I do when I wake up is thank God for this day. But I think somewhere along the path, when I got a little bit of fight, I still had a lot of challenges, but I wasn't discouraged. I started to just embrace my challenges, and that was good for me to do. And so embracing your challenges and just being grateful for being here, being able to try to work through them and getting a little better. You know, I've been an athlete. I was an accomplished equestrian. I've done a lot of wilderness activities. I biked a couple hundred miles carrying my own gear in Ireland. And I had to be grateful for 10 steps. Again, it's not barely across the room. That hardly was an athletic feat for me. But I had to get to a place, this is where I'm at. And I made those 10 steps and I kept making them every day. And I was grateful for them. And that changes along with showing up for yourself every day. I you know, people will ask me, so you just got to show, and I still show up for myself every day. You have to show up every, if you're not going to show up, who is? And showing up every day is part of gratitude. I mean, it really is. It's like, you know, I'm here. Thank you. You know, what can I do? And, you know, how can I serve? And again, that just widens and increases your world when you have that kind of spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so inspiring. I remember you say, I wake up every morning just with overwhelming gratitude just to see the sunrise.
I do. I mean, you know, for a long time, I wasn't sure I was going to be, you know, anywhere or have any kind of a life. And, you know, I had a, we have a lot of forces in the system that are against us. And so, you know, to me, the biggest miracle was as I found my way through this, out of the system. You know, not that so much that I healed, that I found a way to get breakthrough the system, because I was trapped in it. You know, I was the perfect candidate for one more medication. You know, because when you take that many, you're now creating problems and you need your medication for that. And it's hard to get out. Yeah.
You get in the cascade more and more and more, side effects upon side effects.
Yeah. And you got one more problem and you know you're adding another bottle to that.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get out because we're discouraged from getting out. And there's not very many people that show you a way out or willing to take the risk to get out. Because I had tons of doctors that, you know, were like, you can't do that. And I'm like, oh, yes, I can. You know, and it got to the point where, which again, I always like to do a caveat. I'm not recommending anybody to do it. But, you know, I took care of this myself because they weren't going to help me. And I did it really slow and I did my research because, you know, they're like, no, you got to stay on all this medication. This is just not an option for you. And I knew I could get well enough to get off.
How do you feel now, Mimi? Because we did the video together and you were on Dr. Baker's channel and with Dr. Chafee. And your story is inspiring a lot of people. And I really believe through this documentary, it's going to reach a ton of people and inspire them. But I'm reading comments on the video you and I did together where people are like, this is changing my life forever. I saw Mimi do this and now I'm doing it and I'm having similar results. Or I'm no longer depressed or have anxiety or it's changing their life. How does that make you feel when your story is inspiring people to change like that?
It's a little overwhelming and it's heartwarming. And I've made some great friends through this journey. People that I've met, it feels good. You know, I'm fueled by it. I'm fueled, you know, it keeps me going. You know, I have days where I'm like, you know, I'm really tired. I'm sore. I really don't want to walk the bridge. And I do, I post in the morning on Twitter what I'm doing for the day. And it's like, no, you told everybody you were walking on that bridge.
Right.
You know, if you don't walk on that bridge, you know, you're just sending a message. They don't need to walk on the bridge, you know, do their walk. And I know they need to do their walk. So that means I need to do mine. So it fuels me to keep going. And, I love people and I love seeing people get well and I love, you know, hearing that people find hope and find joy and are, you know, doing things that they had given up thinking they could ever do.
Yeah.
You know, so it feels great.
Yeah, it's incredible. And the one commonality I've been finding interviewing so many people that have done this, done carnivore, is the gratitude. It's such a weird thing. Like everyone I've been interviewing says the same. I just have this, there's almost a point where you do this and you get to this stage of carnivore proper human diet where all of a sudden you have this gratitude. I don't know if it's because we've got a second chance at life or because we're really feeling what it's like to truly live our lives to the fullest potential. There's something there, though. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and maybe both of those. Maybe both of those.
Right.
Yeah. Because I do, I mean, that's great. I do feel like I'm living my fullest potential.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's a really good feeling.
Yeah, and you want to share it with other people, and you want to, like, congregate with other people that have that same thing. It's like a great energy.
It is. It is a great energy. Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, do you have I can't believe we've already been talking for over an hour. Do you have a little more time, Mimi? Or we got a couple?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I have a couple more time. I got a couple show and tells here for you.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you. So many incredible things happened when we filmed Mimi, but the food was the best food I've ever eaten. The beef shanks you made, I've since made them several times. The girls love them. For those of you that are interested, I think I did a whole video on my channel cooking the beef shanks, Mimi's famous beef shanks at one point. Do you have any other recipes, or have you been doing more beef shanks? You've been experimenting?
No, I've been doing more beef shanks. Yeah, I'm showing to you really quick because I drive right. And I wanted to show what my... where my beef shanks are.
Oh, wow.
So here's beef shanks. And they have the nice marrow in the center of the bones. I really encourage everybody, especially in light of everything that's happened, to find a local farmer. Make friends with him. And do it before you absolutely have to, because they'll be grateful. One, it's important to support them, but they'll be grateful and will take care of you when the time comes, because you help them when... it isn't urgent, and I do believe it's going to be urgent. I get my beef from Independence Arc Farms, and they're in Arkansas. It's my absolute favorite. I tried a lot of places. But look at these. Look at that marrow.
Wow.
So beef shanks are my favorite, and I'm so glad you like my beef shanks. and I like them for a couple of reasons. One, I love braise them, and I love the meat. I also get broth with it. And then the bones I'll use, I get marrow, which is really good. And then the bones I'll use two times to make my homemade bone broth. Have you made that yet? I know we talked about it.
We did. Yes. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, you can use your bones twice. You just use a little apple cider vinegar the second time. It won't be as gelatinous, but it'll still be good. Wow. And so, you know, I'll get out of four beef shanks, I'll get 3 quarts of bone broth. That'll be one meal. That'll be one super generous meal for the day. And that's kind of what I'm just doing, is one meal. I'll be really stuffed for the next 24 hours. I'll have that out of those two shanks. And I will get my lard to cook for the week, because I'll chill it and I get a nice layer of lard. And 3 quarts of bone broth for that. I mean, there's no reason why anybody, I mean, that's pretty economical, because I think, you know, shanks is not a really expensive cut.
Right. And it's so good. Like I get stuck in a rut where I just keep doing the same things over and over again. The beef shanks, it just falls off the bone. It's so tender, different flavor.
Yeah.
A lot of people really think good. Like me, I'm like, don't you get bored with beef? But then when you look at all of the different cuts, it's almost like different food groups. Beef shank is like a completely different thing versus
ribeye. It is a
like
different food group. I don't get bored, and I use a lot. So I'm trying to think what other kind of recipes. You know, I'm working on a few, but I'll tell you what I'm doing. It's my new thing. I'm like running this machine like every single day. So I treated myself to a slicer machine that slices my meat thin. Oh, I know what I do. You're probably going to die when you hear it. I take a boneless ribeye and I dry brine it, because I dry brine all my beef, and I freeze it for about 45 minutes, and then I shave it and I make a shaved, and then I saute it and make a shaved ribeye bowl. Oh. I think it's better than the whole ribeye.
Wow.
And I do it like, a little thinner than a quarter of an inch. And then I fill up my bowl with that, and it's like mouth-watering. And then I bought a dehydrator, so here's my beef jerky.
Oh, wow.
Biltong, I'm probably saying it wrong. I'm going to try that tomorrow. That's brined in vinegar, but this is my jerky. And I do different kind of, I do use a little seasoning. I actually personally, my first batch was just with salt, and I like that the best. This I tried, and it's delicious with a little, I did a little lime juice and a little chili powder. It's good, but I'm going to go back to just the beef. And this is a flank steak or a London broil. I did a round steak, and tomorrow for the thicker cut, which is in the vinegar, cured, it'll be vinegar and salt, is a top round. So I'm making my own jerky, which is a great snack. You know, I know, I'm sure there's some good jerky companies, but honestly, once you've made homemade, you're not buying it from anyone. And it's really easy. It's fun to make. I happen to like it really chewy. If I'm not chewing it for a couple minutes, it's not good jerky.
Right.
And, I mean, it's just, it's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'll get your address and I'll send you some. I don't know if you've ever made jerky before.
I did one time and I want to do it. I haven't gotten back to it, but I want to do it again. I've also been doing the dry brine, which I never did before. I learned that from you a lot of different cuts of meat now since then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's great. And I have a 5-liter to your shelf dehydrator. It did this whole, more than this batch, because I've been having some of this. And really, it's easy. 4 hours, it's done. It just shuts off by itself. And, you know, my machine, they were each of them like $100. Honestly, so worth the money already. And I've just gotten them for about a week. Mm.
I know you've got enough. I know you got a lot going on, but I remember I said this to you there is when is Mimi going to open a restaurant up? Because that would be amazing.
Not at my age. Already somebody said today, we got a jerky line coming, because I posted on Twitter. I'm like, no, I'm not doing this at my I'm not doing this at my age. Right. Yeah. But, you know, 20 years ago, I actually would have. I've worked as a chef before in a past life, so I definitely would have, but no, not now. Just for friends and family, I'll cook.
Right. All right, we got a couple of comments. Sure. Lynn Tucker Carnivore said, thank you so much, Mimi, for sharing your story with Carrie and Adam. What a remarkable transformation and valuable contribution to the documentary to help others. We got my friend Courtney, the ME Lion, says, Mimi looks beautiful.
Thank you. So nice to hear.
Ribeye Ranger, Mimi is Rocky. Gets knocked down at least 3 times, but keeps getting up off of the canvas and keeps fighting. We got a question from Q Healer asking, is it okay to eat mostly chicken and less beef on the carnivore diet? I kind of don't like the minced beef taste a lot. Thank you for considering my question.
I'll tell you my view. You can eat whatever you want on the carnivore diet, but I don't believe you're going to get the benefit without eating the beef. It's just for me, I have chicken twice a year. And, it's like it's not worth the effort to chew. And minced beef, ground beef, if you don't like it, there are so many other cuts that are less expensive, honestly. If you take the beef shanks or you take an arm roast or a chuck roast, it might be the same price, but then if you get bone broth from it, it comes out cheaper. And I usually have a cup of bone broth every day. So I really would encourage you to try other cuts of meat and try some dry brining, because I think you might like the flavor a little better.
Yeah, I agree.
I only eat steak once a week, you know, maybe sometimes twice. It doesn't have to be an expensive way to eat. And frankly, I like the varied cuts myself. So if you don't like minced beef, you know, try something else and try to add more beef than chicken. I just don't think you're going to get the nutritional value. And that's my unscientific opinion. I don't have a degree in nutrition, but I don't know how you feel, Carrie.
Yeah, I agree. I have problems with chicken, inflammation. Sometimes I eat chicken, but I think part of it too is when I eat beef, or in particular, fatty cuts of meat. It's all about the fat and getting a lot of fat. So if you're eating chicken or chicken breast, you're not going to be getting a lot of fat. And
right. We
seem to thrive on the fat. So
well, we do, definitely.
question. This is from Janine. I don't know. Janine was at our meetup that we had, Mimi.
Okay. Hi.
Yeah. She says, why do you take 800 mg of magnesium per day?
Oh.
And how to stay injury free?
Oh, so I do. I had a lot of, and actually I've cut it down a little bit. I take, and I don't think everybody needs that much. I had a lot of neuro problems, including multiple sleep disturbances. And so when I took it, those seemed to make it all better. And I just haven't stopped taking it. I don't think, you know, 100 or 200 milligrams, I think, is the recommendation. I do 3 and 8 for, you know, cognition and sleep. And then the, was it glycinate's the other one? I don't think you have to. It just worked for me, and I haven't changed it.
Yeah.
And I made down the road. It's kind of like, you know, I don't see anything. It's not affecting me negatively, and it helped a lot of nighttime ailments. So why mess with it?
Right.
And how do I stay injury-free? I've built slowly. I have a private trainer. She's going to be actually 76 on Wednesday. I call her the boss. And I picked somebody who was older, who wasn't going to, you know, go, oh, this lady can do a lot and then hurt myself. I go very slow. I have an enormous amount of workarounds. That doesn't mean I stop. And I listen to my body when I have to back off. And I take rest days. And I soak in magnesium in the tub. I usually, after I train, you know, at the end of the day, I'll soak. So you just got to go slow. You have to listen to your body.
And Mimi is absolutely killing it too, by the way. We followed Mimi on the bridge and back with the camera. And as soon as I get caught up, she'd take off again. I'd be like, slow down. I'm running behind you with the camera.
Oh, that's good.
We did a, you did a cold plunge in the ocean, the bridge run, which was a couple of miles, I think, there and back.
We did. And then we did a training session with the boss, me running up and down the stairs with a kettlebell.
And weights.
And, you know, I love the stairs because I never went back to my townhouse with 27 steps. They moved me out of it. I moved in with my daughter and son-in-law, and they said, I'll never be able to walk up steps again. I do those every week just because I can do them. I run up steps. Mm. And, you know, and that sort of fuels my spirit, too, that I could do something that I was told I'd never walk again, and now I run up and down with a kettlebell.
That's awesome. We got a question from Leah. Aloha. Mimi, how long did it take being on carnivore to see your health issues get better?
Well, so I got better on keto for me to eliminate all of them, and particularly the infections that I kept getting. I'm 7 months free. So it took for me, you know, over a year before I started to, it really wasn't until I went Lion's Diet this January that, to me, that was the push for better. That doesn't mean it'll be for you. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
You know, I had an awful lot of things I had to try to chip away at.
Right.
And so it took longer, but actually in hindsight, I don't think, for as sick as I was, it's been all that long. I mean, you know, a little over 5 years ago, I had a stroke, and look with all these ailments and now. So I think that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Sally said, Carrie and Mimi, I am the same right now as Mimi was. I had a stroke, RA, had clots go to my lungs twice, had COVID, made my breathing worse. I think she was saying she wants to do carnivore. I guess, what advice would you give, Mimi, to someone that's thinking about doing carnivore, but kind of like you, this sounds crazy. Like, what are you talking about? Just eating meat?
Well, what you're doing isn't working, so probably a good idea to try something else. And try it slow, you know? You know, here's the thing. You know, I started with a little bit more protein and fat. I did the 50, 25, 25. So 50 fat, 25 protein, 25 carbs, clean carbs now. I do want to stress I was clean keto, not packaged. Honestly, that was a great way to me start. It was an easy way to start. It was easy to stick with. And as I started to get better, my body started to actually crave more of the good foods. And I just kept going with it. And then I made the transition to carnivore. You know, you've got a lot of things going on. If I had to do it over again, I don't know that I would go straight to carnivore. It might have been too much for me to start. You know, so start adding more beef. And, you know, see, you know, you start to feel better with it. 2 weeks, add more. And start eliminating what isn't serving you. And again, if what you're doing isn't working, what I was doing was not working for me. So when I made a change, I found something that was. And that's good motivation to try something different.
Absolutely. And Sally, if you're struggling, there's some really good groups out there too. Mimi's a warrior. Like, she just took this on herself, but there's some pretty good groups out there. There's free groups as well. If you need more support, there's some groups that you just maybe 30 days just to get you going. If you have different questions and things like that, great free videos too. Like Dr. Barry has carnivore 101 videos and things like that.
And I'm symptom free from RA too. You know, RA is really painful. And you can get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Christine said, your story is inspiring, Mimi. When your doctors saw your results, did they follow up and do research?
No. As I showed you when you were here, the only one that took notes was my movement disorder for Parkinson's physician. The rest didn't want to hear. And I don't go see any of them. I have zero doctors right now. But no, nobody other than my movement disorder doctor, nobody wanted to hear.
Right. Susan said, Mimi, your story is a true testament to perseverance and staying the course in this way of living life, seeing the light, trusting, welcoming the future. Nourishment is paramount.
Oh, thank you.
Q Healer, $5 super sticker. Thank you so much for that. All of those go 100% towards our documentary. Really appreciate that. Jamie said, I love your story. Mimi brings tears to my eyes. Being healed on carnivore also. I'm so happy for you. Much love from Northern Ontario.
Oh, thank you.
And we got a member. Thank you for the membership as well. That all goes towards the documentary. Hi, Carrie and Mimi. Thanks. I'm now 159 days lion.
Way to go.
And we got one more from the same Obi Pixel. Congrats, Mimi. Demetrios, I'm 159 days lion, enjoying biltong as a snack. Love ribeye, tomahawk, and lamb. Weight loss slowed, but clothes fit better. Struggling with sleep. Don't get tired easily. Do you have any tips?
Oh, yeah. So sleep was a huge thing that I had to work through. If you follow me on Twitter, and you feel free, if you do, to DM me. I have quite a few posts on sleep. The magnesium definitely helped me with sleep. I avoid blue light. I'm looking at a lot of blue light now. I'll probably be up at night some, but I like candles. You see my candles in the back. I like candles and turn my lights off a couple hours before the end of the day because blue light will affect your sleep. I live by the sun, so I'm rise with the sunrise, and I have lights out by the sunset. I take a warm bath, take a bath with magnesium. I don't watch any devices. My bedroom, I don't have in that. I keep my room cool. And I get plenty of exercise. So I'm tuckered out at the end of the day. And I don't get exercise towards the end of the day because then my legs feel like they want to keep moving. I have glycine. Sometimes I take a little glycine will help me with sleep at night. And I'm trying to think what else. And I keep a routine on that. So, and it takes time, but all that's helped me. And I sleep most of the time really well. And I get a good 9 hours. That seems to work for me. I need that little extra sleep. But I don't know that we can fully heal unless we get good sleep. So definitely make that a priority. Oh, and I get sun. I sun gaze and I get my vitamin D early in the morning when I'm walking. So make sure you get suns as close to the sunrise. Get that's the best sun to get.
Yeah, this is like a master class. This is like really good stuff, especially with sleep.
There was so many things I had to do to get well. It just wasn't one. I mean, it really was an arsenal of things.
Right.
And it's been good for me. You know, I've got an enormous amount of energy. I'm strong. I'm fit. You know, it's taken off all that for me to be my best self and to avoid going back into the system, as I call it. So,
yeah, great advice. So just a couple of quick lessons that I took away from this so far is the stroke you mentioned. There's signs of a stroke that you don't want to ignore. You want to get the TPA as soon as possible. You got to be your own advocate or have an advocate. You got to take things in your own two hands because you go to the doctor and a lot of times they'll just try to push you and get you out of there. And well, there's probably a lot more I'm missing as well, but your perseverance is amazing. But the sleep tips as well. I've done magnesium and that's really helped with my sleep. But everything else you mentioned is just right on. Like the sleep routine is so important and getting the natural sunlight. That has been a game changer for me. Getting natural sunlight first thing in the morning. Don't let artificial light hit your eyes, not the bathroom light or your phone or anything like that. Seems to reset your circadian rhythm, and I sleep so much better that way. But a lot of people will say, what do we need magnesium for? I thought we get everything from the meat, but Dr. Barry's done some really good videos on that. I think his thing was back in the day, humans would drink puddle water or lake water. They'd get some of these minerals that we're not getting because all of our water is filtered sort of thing. So magnesium has helped me as well.
Yeah, and my understanding, magnesium is the one thing that nobody's getting without taking a supplement.
Right.
Because it's just stripped out of every source that we have. Yeah.
Yeah, the world has changed.
Yes.
We don't get it like we used to. So, yeah. Mimi, this has been incredible. Thank you so much. As we wrap up, I just have one more question. What are you're doing amazing now. What are your plans for the future?
So if I can get my act together and get over some hurdles, I want to write a book. So that's one. And then I am still training and still planning on doing the French Way, which is 500 miles, 800 kilometers across Spain next April and May. And I expect to. I'm up to 16 miles and I'm doing it really with a lot of ease and my pace and everything is way ahead and it's of what I'm supposed to do when I'm in Spain. And when I'm in Spain will be beautiful weather in the, you know, 50s to high 60s, and I'm doing it in 90 to 100 degree weather. So I will fully expect to do that, walk 500 miles across Spain and do the pilgrimage about 35 days next spring.
That is incredible. If you guys didn't catch that part, 500 miles. So you were using a walker. You were barely able to go 10 more steps. And now fast forward, you're going to be going 500 miles.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It's so inspiring. So everyone that's watching this now, thank you so much for your comments. While we were doing this interview, I made sure to update it because I didn't have it in there before. But in the description is Mimi's Twitter link and Instagram link. Is there anything else you want to close out with or anywhere else people can find you, Mimi?
No, I think that's, you know, I think that's good. I just, you know, we're never too sick. We're never too old. It's never too late.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mimi. You are an inspiration.
Thank you, Carrie.
Really inspiring. Thank you, everyone, for leaving your comments. Go check out Mimi on Instagram and Twitter and have a good night. Bye, everyone.